Stay tuned.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Money Talk. I'm Neil Kreisel and Diane Duvernay, your hosts, every week right here on AM 1290, repeated at 11 and on Saturdays at 6. We're brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending, whose highly trained and experienced team takes great pride in helping people with home financing, offering competitive rates and a wide array of loan programs. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people in Santa Barbara at Figueroa and Anacapa Streets, and in Montecito's Upper Village. And Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm in Santa Barbara, providing its clients with the personal care and attention of a small independent firm, coupled with the vast resources of a major financial institution.
Hi, Neil. How are you doing today?
I'm doing good. It's always good to be here.
Well, you know, I've gotten several emails at the Money Talk email address today asking how your speech went for those people that were unable to attend the big event.
So everybody in America has a cell phone. You cannot walk out on the street without getting someone to record you. I made a speech in front of 300 people Saturday night, and no one recorded it.
I know. I wanted
a copy. Everybody's complaining about privacy. No one thought to record it. So I had this, I thought, excellent speech that is just now in the atmosphere.
Well, I got a few clips, and I'm going to post them to our Money Talk Facebook account.
Oh, excellent.
So I heard it was very impressive. Job well done.
Thank you.
So we have a guest with us today. We have Alan Stein Jr., who is a published author of RaiseYourGameBook.com and a keynote speaker. Alan, thanks so much for being here with us.
Oh, my pleasure. I'm excited to talk with you guys.
So before we do the first article, I just want to say that this guest today was recommended by one of my best friends in
town.
And
a previous guest.
And a previous guest, Paul Levine, who is a fantastic author. And he said, Alan, that you are the best, and we should ask if you would be a guest. And I want to let everyone know who reads the Jake Lasseter series, which is Paul's books, the last one being Bum Luck, that you better hurry up and read all of the previous books because, and I think this is the first media announcement, but he has written another book. And the Jake Lasseter saga continues. So you better hurry up. Go to Amazon.com. It's Paul Levine and get yourself all those back books.
I think you left out the most important link to our guest today, Alan Stein Jr., is he's also a rabid Penn State fan.
I think everyone that knows Paul knows that that's a, that's a given. And I became a rabid Penn State fan.
I know. I heard.
Yeah. So, the first article
Which is just shocking, by the way.
It's just shocking. My kids say to me,
I'm sorry, I couldn't even hold that.
I have two sons in their late 40s, and you're supposed to
they
say...
They are mid-40s, for the record.
And you're supposed to say I look too young.
You look way too young.
Yeah. But the thing that's, I think, very frustrating for them is that they never could get me to watch college football with them. And now on Saturdays, I'm watching Penn State with Paul, and they're really frustrated that... I wouldn't do it with them, and I would do it with Paul. So the first article, moving on.
Moving on from your...
The first article is not really an article. It was in today's Wall Street Journal. It's a graph, and it's so interesting. It's a graph of performance of hedge funds for 5 years, 3 years, 1 year, and current January through June. And in every instance, and there's 16 different classes of hedge funds, every one of them did significantly worse than the S&P 500. So it's not just the last quarter, it's not just the last year. For 5 years, hedge funds, which are very expensive if you pay all those, think about all those fees, has done consistently awful.
And what's really interesting is that the hedge fund market is really saturated. I know young kids that are trying to start their hedge fund. I know older people getting out of whatever business they're in to start a hedge fund. The reality is hedge funds have underperformed since, you know, the late 2000s because there's an oversaturation in the market. It's hard to find good companies, let alone when you have all this money chasing it.
Well, and the best example, given who our guest is that if you have, you know, 10 or 15 really good football teams, it's sustainable. If you have 500 or 5,000 football teams, you're not going to be able to get the quality of players. And when hedge funds first started 50 years ago, the two or three best money managers in the country became hedge fund managers. And in the last 15 years, everyone decided they could play professional football, or in this case, professional money management. And it just diluted the quality of the fund managers.
And the real key is that in the hedge fund world, there isn't the same regulation that there is in a retail market space or a professional money manager, not in the hedge fund wrapper. And so it's really something to be careful of as an investor, for sure.
So the next article is also from today's Wall Street Journal, and it talks about the percentage of money managed by Wall Street firms that are in index funds versus money that is in financial advisors that are subject to the fiduciary rule, or just in general population. And what they found is there's a significant difference in the percentage when big brokers are only putting up 29% of their assets in index funds. And what the article talks about is the fact that not only is the culture of Wall Street is that they can, quote unquote, beat the market. They have certain skills, but the fact that they get brokerage commissions on higher feed product and on index funds, they're not going to make any money, which is one of the reasons why the fiduciary rule is so important.
I completely agree. I think the fiduciary rule, it's really a shame that it didn't come to fruition last year when it was supposed to.
And the other thing about it is if registered investment advisors are paid mainly by annual fees, and therefore it's not as important to them as commissions are to brokers. So when you compensate someone for commissions, there's a tendency to look at transactions rather than performance. The next article, again, is a very short one. It talks about the gains in precious metals in the last week. And, you know, there's always been periods in which precious metals have done well, particularly in periods of uncertainty where gold is a hedge against the possibility of a catastrophe. But this article talks about another reason that hasn't really been evident over the last 50 years, and that is the one significant negative of investing in a commodity like precious metals is that you're giving up interest income that creates an opportunity loss. But with interest rates close to zero, that's not a problem anymore. So some people are saying, given the uncertainty, and since it really doesn't cost me that much to put my money in a non-interest-bearing metal because I can't get much in a investment in a fixed income short-term security, I might as well take a shot at metal investing.
You know what's interesting is that when you look at the different phases of the business cycle and you look at the expansion phase in which we're in now, the last thing to happen normally in that expansion phase is for commodities to rise. And we haven't seen that rising of the commodity market yet. A lot of it, you can point to the fact that there's been a glut of oil, and oil makes up a big part of that commodity space. But it is interesting to see that precious metals are gaining. It's kind of that last bit that we need to see before we could hit into that potential, you know, market decline.
The next article is entitled Trump Boasts Versus Reality in Luring Jobs Back to the U.S. And what this article talks about is the fact that foreign investment in the United States grew at a slower annual rate than in the last 2 years. And amount of jobs being added in the manufacturing area is really insignificant. And one of the reasons for that happening is that while it may be more expensive to do business in China, jobs aren't being switched to the United States. They're being, if they can, places like Vietnam. So the rhetoric about this tariff war helping manufacturing business has not been borne out either by the statistics or, when you think about it, the differential in costs may not be achieved in China anymore, but there are plenty of places that companies are looking at rather than in the Midwest. So, by the way, on the radio, Diane, you can't shrug your shoulders. You can't say, good point. You know what? I'm going to explain that to you during the break. You're listening to Money Talk. on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
If you have trouble handling your anger, get help. If someone you love is hurting or scaring you, get help. There is a full-service domestic violence agency in Santa Barbara County, which offers emergency shelter, counseling, transitional housing, anger management, and teen outreach programs. Its name is Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Call their 24-hour helpline at 964-5245. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County. Putting an end to domestic violence.
Did you know that domestic violence sends more than 500 women and children to emergency shelters every year? There is a place where all family members affected by domestic violence can get help. Domestic Violence Solutions for Santa Barbara County, with four 24-hour phone lines to help. In Santa Barbara, call 964-5245. In Santa Maria, call 925-2160. In Lompoc, call 736-0965. And in Santa Ynez, call 686-4390.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Cornerstone Home Lending. Since 1988, a mortgage banker and direct lender that believes in providing in-depth loan consulting to its customers in a personalized and honest manner. And we can be reached at 805-564-1290.
Or you could email us at moneytalk1290@gmail.com, like many of our listeners did, to find out how your speech went, Neil. So if you're just joining us, we have the pleasure of having Alan Stein Jr. on air with us today. He teaches proven strategies to improve organizational performance, create effective leadership, increase team cohesion and collaboration, and develop winning mindsets, rituals, and routines. Alan, thanks so much for being here with us.
Oh, my pleasure.
So tell us a little bit about how you got to be a keynote speaker and best-selling author in strategies to improve your performance.
We'll take it all the way back to the beginning, where basketball was really my first identifiable passion. And I remember falling in love with the game at 4 or 5 years old. And the reason I bring that up is here 4 decades later, basketball is still a major pillar in my life. And I spent most of my adult life and most of my career in the basketball performance space, and was very fortunate to have an opportunity to work with and work alongside and work for many of the best players in the game. And best coaches. And about 3 years ago, I decided to take all of the stuff that I had learned from them, all of the lessons and strategies and techniques and mindsets, and decided to aim those at more of a corporate audience. And that's what I've been doing for the past 3 years, is teaching businesses how to utilize the same strategies that elite athletes use and show the utility that those strategies and principles have.
Now, what is your secret? How would you say people best realize their potential?
Well, the very first thing you have to do is find what I call their strength zone. And that's the intersection between what they love to do, what they're very passionate about, and what they're naturally pretty good at. And, what's funny is, as a speaker, I run the full gamut. I do talks for elementary school age children, and I do talks for Fortune 100 businesses. And I'm telling folks the same thing. Regardless of age or where you are in your life, you need to continually drill down and find what you love to do and what you're really good at, and then find where those two things intersect. And when you can live in that intersection, that gives you the best chance to actualize your potential. And once you've found that, there's a handful of things like, becoming self-aware, learning how to master the basics. You know, you got to develop championship level habits, find a mentor, be open to feedback. But once you've found that strength zone, those other things usually naturally fall into place.
What happens, though, with people who are successful in the sports arena where there's so much money to be made? And this is true for corporations also, where sometimes they go crazy. And, you know, you look at the example, the current example with our former, you know, Oakland Raiders player and then New England Patriots player, where no one could control whatever it is that was motivating him to act in a way that wasn't conducive to teamwork. So you talk about the intersection between what you love to do and what you can do. It also, I think, requires some maturity as well.
Oh, absolutely. Right on. And a good portion of, you know, our happiness and fulfillment, but certainly our success and significance, is based on the environment that we're in. And, you know, the really high performers and high achievers are smart enough to insulate themselves with an inner circle of people that will keep them in check. You know, people that are willing to be honest and hold them accountable and give feedback, you know, when they step out of bounds. And while I certainly don't know Antonio Brown, I've never met him, so I don't want to inappropriately judge him. But from everything that I've been seeing or reading, it just doesn't sound like he's insulated himself with people that could say, hey, this is going off the rails a little bit. You know, you need to get back to doing what you do best and so forth. So, and I think that's good lessons for all of us.
But there's a,
you know,
we've all heard that
that you are the company you keep, and, you know, and I forgot who originally said that, you know, you are the average of the five people that you spend the most time with. But the reason those types of sayings have been around for longer than I've been around is because they're true. And I find that lots of times when people end up kind of going off the deep end, it's because they haven't surrounded themselves with a core group of people with incredibly high character and created an environment where those people can give them feedback.
But the environment sometimes makes it very difficult. If you look at, like, I've become a Penn State football fan now, and a sophomore in high school.
You can't even say that with a straight face.
No, it's true. And a sophomore or junior in high school announces that they're going to sign with a particular team. They create a YouTube video, and, you know, they're courted at, you know, they're 15, 16 years old, and you get, you know, the coach of a Big Ten team coming to their hometown to convince them to play. It's very difficult to, I would imagine, for some of these young people to be level-headed when the environment itself is so conducive to letting people believe that they're the center of the universe.
Oh, absolutely. And it's becoming increasingly more difficult to do that. But the good ones still do it. And, you know, I was, and I too now am a Penn State football fan, although I'm not a Penn State alum, which I, you know, now you and I share in common. But you know, having worked at two really renowned high school programs here in the Washington, D.C. area, the most recent of which was DeMassa Catholic High School, which is has over 20 players in the NBA, I remember vividly working with some of these kids when they were younger, and they're now in the NBA. And how they were able to surround themselves with a very close-knit group of people that would insulate them from all of these people telling them how great they were. You know, one of the, especially for young people that are starting to ascend to the peak of their performance in either sport or any other area of life, is to start to feel entitled or to start to get complacent because you think you've always arrived. And those are things that are incredibly detrimental to performance. And those that surround themselves with people that don't allow that to happen, you know, they don't allow them to get intoxicated off all of the headlines and all of the YouTube videos and all of the social shout-outs. They keep them in check and say, yes, you know, you've earned a certain level of success, and for that it's okay to be proud, but you really haven't achieved anything yet, and you got to really keep your head down and stay focused on, you know, developing great habits and doing the little things to earn success on the biggest stages.
So you talk about building good habits. What are some strong habits or some advice of strong habits that business owners should take on?
The first is, and this is pretty, you know, I can say this regardless of what business someone is in, is to not forget that they're still in the relationship business. You know, whether you're in a service-based business or a product-based business, you can't forget the fact that the people on your team, your colleagues and your coworkers, are human beings, And certainly the people that you serve, your clients and your customers, are human beings as well. And you can't ever get too far removed from investing in those relationships. And there's even a third relationship, and this is usually the one that I start with when I talk with business owners, is you can't forget about the relationship you have with yourself. And one of the best habits that you can get into is to make sure that you are filling your own bucket first, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, if appropriate, and you're doing everything you can to keep your bucket full so that your battery is fully charged in order to serve others. You know, especially if you've got a startup, you know, anyone listening to this that has started a business knows that those early years are exhausting in every way, shape, or form. And the only way you can sustain a high level of performance is if you're taking care of yourself first. And the mistake that many make, and this is the habit that we don't want to have, is they're doing everything to serve everyone else, but they're running on fumes. You know, they don't eat well. They stop working out. They never sleep because they're always burning the candle at both ends. And while that may be noble in intention, it's simply not sustainable. So if you want to serve others in any capacity, you have to take care of yourself first.
It's kind of like on the airline, you must secure your mask and then help others, right?
It's exactly right. Yes, that analogy is perfect.
You know, one of the things that I find difficult for some CEOs to do is to admit they don't know something. And there was an interview with one of the senior people from Citibank right after the financial crisis, and they asked about the collateralized mortgage debacle and why didn't they see the risk. And he admitted, he said, "I really didn't understand it." But he never asked what it was that made the bank believe they were safe. It's sometimes difficult when you have all these accolades, when you're the chairman of the board or when you're president, to be humble enough and have ego strength enough to realize that you should say, "I don't know what that means. Can you explain it to me?"
That's such a good point.
Well, I love that you brought up humility because, to me, that's one of the cornerstones of an effective leader in sport or in business, is blending confidence. And confidence comes from demonstrated performance. So you earn your confidence, what we like to say, during the unseen hours. You know, when no one's watching, that's when you're earning the right to be successful. But you blend that with a humility of saying, "I don't have all of the answers, and when I come across something that I don't know, I'm either going to find out or I'm going to delegate it to someone that is their area of expertise so that the team still remains strong." And I think you said it perfectly. Ultimately, that it's because the ego gets in the way, that they feel like that because they're at the top of the org chart that they can't admit that they don't know something, and that's an inevitable pitfall. You know, the best coaches that I've ever been around all have very high humility, and they acknowledge what things they don't do very well, and they either work on those or, again, they hire someone or delegate to someone that can do those things at a world-class level so that the team doesn't suffer.
You're listening to Money Talk on the Santa Barbara News Press radio station. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
Peek-a-boo. Peek-a-boo. Smile.
Smile, buddy.
Come on, smile. Oh, honey, he's still not smiling.
Maybe he's not a smiler.
Yeah, maybe he's just not a happy baby.
Maybe he's just being a boy. You know how boys are.
Or maybe he's teething. Oh, poor baby. I think his gums hurt.
Maybe he's just tired.
Or maybe his tummy hurts. He didn't eat that much.
Maybe he's not ticklish.
You think maybe he's scared of the dog?
Maybe he'll outgrow it. Maybe it's a phase. Maybe he just doesn't like smiling.
Maybe he has autism, and we can definitely do something to help.
Maybe is all you need to find out more about autism. No Big Joyful Smiles by 6 months is one early sign. Learn the others at autismspeaks.org/signs or see a doctor today for an autism screening. The sooner it's diagnosed, the better. And it can make a lifetime of difference. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
As Californians, we know that an earthquake can strike at any time. Having a plan on what to do when the shaking starts is vital. The only thing better would be to also receive an alert that the shaking is coming. Earthquake experts and public safety officials in California are developing an earthquake early warning system. Even a few seconds of notice could allow you to take action. For more information on the future of earthquake early warning, go to calalerts.org. Sponsored by the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, aired by the California Broadcasters.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Alan Stein Jr., who is a successful business owner and a veteran basketball performance coach. He's spent his whole career working with the highest performing athletes on the planet, including NBA superstar Kevin Durant. Thanks so much for being with us, Alan. So before the break, you were talking about mastering the basics. And it's interesting that you brought that up because I was sharing with my son your story about Kobe Bryant, and I was hoping that you would share it here on the air. I was reading it on your website.
Oh, I'll be happy to. That is my signature story because that's probably the most important theme and pillar of all of my talks and certainly of my book. Back in 2007, Nike flew me out to Los Angeles to work the first ever Kobe Bryant Skills Academy. And Nike was kind of on the forefront at that time of getting back to the basics and teaching the fundamentals. And they knew in order to make that happen that they needed to build stuff around their signature marquee players. And for anyone listening right now that doesn't follow basketball closely, just know that in 2007, Kobe was the best player in the game. And
this is Kobe Bryant territory.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I spent my whole life in a basketball bubble, and I had kind of heard this urban legend, especially in the training space, of how insanely intense Kobe's individual workouts were. So now that I was on his camp staff, I figured this was my chance. This was my shot. So at my earliest opportunity, I walked up to Kobe and asked if I could watch one of his workouts. And he was incredibly gracious and smiled and said, "Sure, man, no problem. I'm going tomorrow at 4. And I got a little bit confused because I had just got done looking through the camp schedule, and the camp schedule said that the first workout with the players was the following day at 3:30. And Kobe quickly recognized that confused look on my face and said, "Yeah, that's 4 a.m. Well, as you and your listeners know, there's really not a reason why you can't be somewhere at 4 in the morning. It's, at least not an excuse that a guy like Kobe Bryant's going to accept. So,
yeah, sleep is the only thing that you can say, and that sounds lame,
yeah,
huh?
And that definitely sounds, and that's an unacceptable one to somebody like him. So I'd pretty much committed myself to being there. And I figured, though, if I was going to be there anyway, that I may as well try and impress him. And I may as well leave my mark and show him how serious of a young trainer I was. So I came up with a plan to beat him to the gym. So I set my alarm for 3 in the morning, and the alarm goes off. I quickly jump up. I get myself together. I hop in a taxi, and I head to the gym. And I arrive. It's 3:30 in the morning, so obviously it's pitch black outside. And yet the moment I step out of the taxi, I can see off in the distance that the gym light is already on. And from the parking lot, I can even faintly hear a ball bouncing and sneakers squeaking. Well, when I walked in the side door to the gym, Kobe was already in a full sweat. He was going through an intense warm-up before his scheduled workout with his trainer started at 4. And out of professional courtesy, I didn't say anything to him. I didn't say anything to his trainer. I didn't want to interrupt. I just sat in the corner to watch. And I remember for the first 45 minutes just being shocked. I was shocked to see that the best player in the world and a true master of his craft was doing the most basic offensive moves and footwork drills. He was really focused on the fundamentals, and I was expecting that a player of his nature was going to be doing something with a lot more sizzle to it. Now, the whole workout lasted a few hours, and when it was over, once again, I didn't say anything to him, and I didn't say anything to his trainer. I just quietly left. But, man, my curiosity really got the best of me. I had to know. So later that day at camp, I went up to him and said, "Kobe, I don't understand. You're the best player in the world. Why are you doing such basic drills?" And once again, he was very gracious, and he flashed that million-dollar smile, but he said with all seriousness, "Why do you think I'm the best in the world? Because I never get bored with the basics." And I just remember having one of those epiphanal moments where here Kobe Bryant is looking me in the eye and saying his quote-unquote secret to greatness is that he never gets bored with the basics. And That was a life-changing lesson for me, because it showed me that just because something is basic, it doesn't mean that it's easy. Those are not synonyms, and yet many people use those words interchangeably, that what it takes to be successful in almost any area of life is usually very basic. But as everyone knows, doing those things consistently every single day is very rarely easy.
And that's why I've had a 50-year marriage. The basics is always to say, yes, dear.
That is a basic of marriage. You are correct, Neil.
Hey. Anywho. So after that uplifting and like bone-chilling, giving you goosebumps story, that's what you have to say, Neil. Nice. So as you know, as many of our listeners are employees in the corporation, and they oftentimes feel like they don't have a lot of influence over the culture if it comes from the top, what qualities should employees look for in their company leaders?
Well, one is, first, before I say that, I would hope that they do realize they have so much more influence over the culture than they may think, and that's
so true.
That average performing organizations only have what you just mentioned is kind of top down leadership, which is called vertical leadership, and the best performing organizations also have what's called horizontal accountability and horizontal leadership, which is where each and every person holds themselves to the personal standard of the person that's at the top of the org chart, and they realize that, you know, my behavior and being in aligned with my beliefs has just as much to do with this culture as anybody else does. So first and foremost, I would hope that they would want to take some more responsibility and accountability on that. However, you do raise an excellent point, and that's, you know, what we should be looking for in a leader. And I always think the first thing starts with just the care factor. You know, does the leader care? Do they care about the vision? Do they care about the mission? Do they care about their colleagues and coworkers? Do they care about serving the customers and clients? I mean, they need to have a passion for being a servant of others first and foremost. And we also mentioned, as we talked earlier, about humility. You know, that's something I want to look for in all leaders, is having a very high humility where they have confidence, but they're willing to acknowledge that they don't have all the answers and that they need to lean on others. And really, all of this stuff that I just mentioned can fall under the umbrella of having a high emotional intelligence. And to me, outside of caring, that's probably the most important thing to look for, is someone that has a very high EQ and can manage and understand their own emotions and feelings, but also can manage and regulate and help inspire others to do the same.
How do you advise people to begin to hone their EQ if they don't otherwise have it yet?
With most things, I think the best way to improve any skill set is to find a mentor. And it's to find somebody that's already kind of blazed the path that you're on. So especially if someone's listening to this and they're kind of on the younger end of their career, is to find a leader or someone that they have high respect for that has demonstrated a very high emotional intelligence, and find ways to be able to serve that person so that the mentorship is not only one way, but kind of immersing yourself in what it is that they've done to develop that. And I had a good friend of mine. His name's Frank Shamrock, a former UFC fighter back in the 90s, one of the guys that put that sport on the map. And he taught me something called the plus equal minus system. And he said, at any moment in your life, you should have a plus, an equal, and a minus. A plus is somebody that we would consider a traditional mentor, and they've already blazed the path that you want to go down. An equal is someone that's trying to accomplish the same things that you'd like to accomplish, and they're on about the same level as you. So you can talk to them about best practices and challenges and so forth. And then he said you also want to find what's called a minus. And he doesn't say that in a diminishing way, but he said always find someone that's a few steps behind where you are that you could serve as the mentor to them. And if you have these three people in your life at all times, it'll keep you sharp, it'll keep you well-rounded, and it'll certainly make sure that you're seeing life and seeing success and seeing performance through a variety of different vantage points. And for me, that's been an incredibly helpful tool, especially for working on and developing emotional intelligence.
And athletes have a short shelf life, typically. Depending on the sport, it could be as little as 6 years. So athletes need to find a way of becoming competent in not only emotional intelligence, but in how to basically read the world, how to get along with people and create a work
relationship
that makes sense, because they're going to have to do something else. So it used to be that if you were in the military, it was something that was attractive on your resume. How attractive is it to be, you know, a college athlete when you're looking for a job?
Incredibly attractive. You know, one of the things that I tell players all the time is that being a teammate, a good teammate, is actually a skill. And it's one of the most valuable skill sets you can possess, because while people may use the vernacular a little bit different, I mean, when you're saying the word employee, you're also saying the word teammate. I mean, it's just a substitution for it. And if you can learn how to be the type of teammate that you'd want to play with and that coaches want to coach, I mean, that is liquid gold. There's not an organization on the planet that is not looking for selfless, team-first type people that could be committed to a vision or a mission and are willing to make personal sacrifices for the greater good of the organization. So, the skill sets, while the playing career may have a very short shelf life, if they're working on these intangible skill sets and things like being a great teammate and being a great leader, those have such high utility that they could carry those things with them for the next 4 or 5 decades.
So you've helped multiple companies generate huge growth numbers. Where do you see the most opportunity for companies to create more growth from where they have? What's the secret there?
The secret is in the culture. You know, it's touching on a little bit of what we spoke about earlier. Culture is the number one determining factor on long-term sustainable results. And culture is simply, is there an alignment between your organization's beliefs and your behaviors? You know, most organizations, they have this perfectly articulated mission statement. You know, some of them have it in their trifold brochure, or it's on the homepage, or some of them even have it on a big gold plaque when you first walk into the office, and it's scripted perfectly. And you spend 5 minutes there, and you realize they're not living in harmony with what's on this board or what's on this website. You know, they talk a good game, but they're not living it. And the highest performing organizations in sport or business are in perfect harmony. What they believe is congruent with how they behave. You know, their actions and their behaviors are absolutely in perfect alignment with what they're trying to accomplish. And that's the number one goal. So I think the key is making sure that behaviors and beliefs are always going hand in hand. And when you find companies that are doing that well, you'll see their performance and their results just continue to skyrocket.
You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KZSB, and we'll be right back.
It's a fact. Successful wealth management is built on strategies that focus on the big picture, take a long-term view, and establish deep and valued relationships. Hello, I'm Diane Duva, founding partner at Arlington Financial Advisors, Santa Barbara's trusted family guide, empowering you to make more informed and confident decisions. At Arlington Financial Advisors, we bring order and balance to your financial life by monitoring and managing risk so you can focus on your work, family, and enjoying the moment. We are a fully independent firm offering strategic financial planning, estate and tax planning, and private money management. Our plans and portfolios are handcrafted using a rigorous and disciplined approach, supported by a consistent yet highly personalized client experience. Our clients look to Arlington Financial Advisors as a home away from home, a comfortable place to protect what they've accomplished while they prepare for what comes next. Please visit arlingtonfinancialadvisors.com or call me, Diane Duva, at 805-699-7300.
Coming up Saturday, October 12th, from noon to 3 p.m., it's the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum's Wine and Seafood Pairing Event. Here's the museum's executive director, Greg Gorga.
You know, it's a harbor and seafood festival. It's the start of the lobster season. And so on our front patio, with that beautiful view, we do a wine and seafood pairing. We have 12 different wineries come in and do tastings. And then we have 4 different chefs do seafood pairings with the wines. There's a band playing, so there's live music out there as well. And then we'll have the talk. tall ship in town, so you can actually walk out and get on the tall ship. Yeah. You can get tickets online at our sbmm.org or in our museum store, and it is just a fabulous time from, I think it's 12 to 3 on the 12th.
To get your tickets for the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum's wine and seafood pairing event, October 12th from noon to 3 p.m., go to sbmm.org or call 805-456-8747.
Welcome to Money Ball. Money Talk. What did I say? Money Book?
Who knows?
Money Ball. That's what I was thinking of. The book, Money Ball. Brought to you by American Riviera Bank, making your life easier with cutting-edge technology, mobile deposits, free use of every ATM machine in the country, and a level of service other banks can only dream about. So, Alan, you've written a bunch of books. Can you tell us about them?
Yeah. At present, I've actually only written one, which is Raise Your Game. But funny enough, and maybe you can see the future, I'm actually already starting on the second book, which will be a follow-up to that. And really, the whole premise behind Raise Your Game is to make sure that you're working all of the time to become the best version of yourself, but you're doing that in service of others so that you can help a team become the best version of itself. And, you know, having worked with elite-level basketball players for 20 years and now having an opportunity to work in the corporate space for the last few, I can see that the level of transfer and the rate of utility is incredibly high, that what it takes to be a high-performing athlete from a framework standpoint is the same thing as it takes to be someone that's a high performer and high achiever in business. And this is true both personally and collectively and organizationally.
And if our listeners want to buy the book, is it on Amazon? How do you buy the book?
It sure is, yeah. You can get it at Amazon. If you'd like to hear the Audible, which I did the read for, you can get the audiobook at audible.com. Or for a whole bunch of free goodies and some extra info on the book, they can just go to raiseyourgamebook.com.
And it's gotten rave reviews. And it's been quoted as being a must-read to take your game to the next level. And you provide concepts and strategies to help people, you know, achieve the best version of themselves. One of the strategies that you have or your advice is focus. And with so many obstacles that business owners are facing when they're looking to start a company, how do you recommend that they manage all the responsibility without becoming overwhelmed? Because oftentimes that overwhelm can have people not making forward progress.
Oh, absolutely. You hit that right on the head. And that's true for really anyone. I mean, in today's day and age, we're just bombarded by, you know, just absolute white noise and distractions every second of every day. And especially with technology and digital advances, these things are only becoming more prevalent. But the main thing that someone would need to do, and this to perform at a high level in any capacity, but definitely for a new business owner, is to focus on what I call living present. And that's just putting all of your focus into the present moment, trying not to get distracted by the past and what happened yesterday, trying not to get anxious or worried about the future, you know, what may or may not happen tomorrow, but really focusing completely on the present moment. And this goes back to kind of the Kobe story, where being in the present moment is a very basic concept. But I'll only speak from my point of view. It's arguably the most challenging thing to do every single day of my life is to be in the present moment. And to be in the present moment means you're always focused on the next play. You don't worry about what just happened. You're focused on what's going to happen next. You put all of your attention into the only two things that you have 100% control over, which is your own attitude and your own effort. And you have a high trust and respect for the process. That you don't get too caught up in outcomes, you focus more on the day-to-day process of what it'll take to make those outcomes much more likely. And when you can do those things, then you'll see outcomes start to take care of themselves.
What do you think of things like yoga and mindfulness? You know, sort of, we call it out here New Age stuff, but it's not so New Age anymore.
Oh, I love all of that stuff. I meditate every day for 10 minutes. I actually follow the Headspace guided meditation app. And this morning was my 808th consecutive day doing 10 minutes of morning meditation. It's the first thing I do every day to allow myself to start in a very grounded, mindful, and aware way. And the only reason I know that, I'm not Rain Man. The app actually tells you how many consecutive days that you've had, and I'm very proud of that streak. And I also do hot yoga 2 to 3 times a week for the exact same reason, to find some stillness of thought, to connect to breath, to just be focused on being mindful and aware. And I found that doing both of those things consistently has made it much easier for me to be in the present moment, to focus on the next play, to focus on what I can control, and to focus on the process. So it's like anything else. You need to be able to practice with purposeful reps if you want to get good at something, and mindfulness is definitely going to fall under that umbrella with meditation and yoga.
Do you find that athletes are willing to do that?
Oh, absolutely. And today more than ever, you know, what's neat is when I first got into the basketball training space in the late 90s, you know, at that point in time, less than a third of NBA teams even had a strength and conditioning consultant. And, you know, that's not that long ago. And if you fast forward to today, every team in the NBA and college, for that matter, not only has a strength and conditioning coach, they have an entire performance division. With physical therapists and massage therapists and nutritionists and yoga teachers and Pilates instructors. I mean, it's that part of the industry has come so far. And it was a much more of a challenge 20 or 30 years ago to get athletes to buy into that. Now it's not very hard because the best performing athletes on the planet, you know, your LeBron James or your Tom Brady's, they're all doing that stuff religiously, which makes it much easier for everyone else to follow suit and to buy in.
You mean, so I'm 5'10", and I weigh 150 pounds. If I were now an athlete, I could then probably play professional football with all of this conditioning, correct?
I wouldn't go that far, but I would say that you'd be closer to actualizing your potential than you probably ever have before.
Wherever that potential
whatever
may
that
be,
could be,
Neil,
right.
Wherever that may be.
I better stick to bowling. You're listening to Money Talk on AM 1290 KCSB, and we'll be right back with our final segment.
For prospective homebuyers, one of the most important steps of the loan process is getting clear and honest information from someone who will speak plainly and truthfully about loan programs and options.
I'm Kelly Marsh, Vice President, California, of Cornerstone Home Lending, where our highly skilled and experienced team takes great pride in helping clients obtain home financing with honest, knowledgeable, fast, friendly, and efficient service. As a Santa Barbara native who has spent the past 20 years in the mortgage industry and has closed over 4,000 loans, I'd appreciate the opportunity to earn your business and invite you to visit thekellymarshteam.com or call my office at 805-563-1100 to learn more about how Cornerstone Home Lending can help you determine the best way to manage mortgage debt to achieve a more stable financial future.
Licensed by the Department of Business Oversight under the California Residential Mortgage Lending Act. California Residential Mortgage Lending Act license number 41DB072220. California Financial Lending Law license number 60DB072528. Loan originator NMLS number 245822. Not a commitment to loan. Equal housing opportunity.
Hi, I'm Jeff Devine from American Riviera Bank. All of our customers were once just like you, stuck with a bank that kept charging more for less. But when they finally made the decision to change banks, American Riviera Bank made the move easy with mobile deposit, online banking, free use of every ATM in the country, and a level of customer service that other banks dream of. Come in and make the move today in our downtown Santa Barbara or Montecito Upper Village branches. American Riviera Bank, smart banking for smart people.
It's important to buckle up your kids.
I know.
Sometimes car seats can be complicated.
I know.
And if your child's in the wrong seat and you get into a crash.
I know.
It could lead to a serious injury.
I know.
So you're 100% sure you have the right car seat for your child's age and size?
I don't know.
Don't think you know. Know you know. Car crashes are a leading killer of children 1 to 13. Make sure you have the right car seat. Visit safercar.gov/the right seat. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Money Talk, brought to you by Arlington Financial Advisors, a leading wealth management firm founded on providing thoughtful, objective, and comprehensive financial guidance for families and entities who are seeking long-term financial confidence.
And if you're just joining us, we have Alan Stein Jr., who is a performance coach, keynote speaker, and author of Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best, with us today on the show. So, Alan, before the break, we were talking about, you know, what really differentiates people is living in the moment. And forgetting what just happened and forget or not worrying about what's going to happen. What advice do you have? Because, you know, for professional athletes and business people alike, when you had a failure that just happened, it's very difficult. You know, I think about the professional golfer when they just missed that birdie putt. How do they then get to the next hole and forget that that happened and play amazing golf again?
Well, they've conditioned themselves to have that next play mentality. And here's what's neat, you know, and I love that you brought up golf because that's probably one of the best ways to epitomize this next play. And, you know, there's a few things clearly that separate professional golfers from everybody else. I mean, the first being they rarely hit bad shots, they rarely have bad rounds, and they rarely have bad games. That's why they're professionals. But they're not immune to that. And one of the other reasons that they're professionals, and this happens all of the time, usually after they hit a bad shot, they have the ability to bounce back and mentally move to the next play, and their next shot is usually a phenomenal course correction. That they hit this awful shot, and you think it's taken them completely out of contention, and yet they can completely get their composure and refocus, and their next shot puts them right back to where they need to be. Whereas an average or a novice golfer hits a bad shot, and then they get so down in the dumps, and they get in their feelings, and they get so frustrated that then the next shot's also a bad shot, and now their confidence is really starting to spiral, and then the next shot is this bad shot, and now they've completely lost it. And I define mental toughness as the ability to refocus on the next important thing, regardless of circumstances or environment, and that's what separates elite athletes from everyone else. You know, if we use basketball as an example, you take somebody like Stephen Curry. You know, I know he doesn't miss, you know, a lot of shots in a row very often. That's why he's so good. But the reason he'll go down in history as the greatest shooter of all time, even if he were to miss 8 shots in a row, he doesn't let that affect the 9th shot. He doesn't let previous performance dictate current performance. And that he'll shoot that 9th one as if he made the first 8. And that's one of the chief reasons that he's the best in the world at what he does.
So how would you translate that into the business setting? Because all too often something goes wrong and it's hard for business people to recover and make that second, third, fourth shot.
Yeah, well, and you hit it on the head there. It is hard, but it's very, very doable. You know, what I coach sales professionals all the time on having the same mentality. You know, I mean, sales is a high contact sport. It's a high touch game, and it's not uncommon, depending on what industry you're in, to fail 9 times out of 10, and you're still a really successful sales professional if you can close 1 out of 10 deals. And the reason those folks can do that is they don't get deterred, or they don't let their confidence waver when they hear a bunch of no's in a row. They realize that was an isolated incident. Maybe it wasn't a good fit, and I'm going to wipe it clean, and I'm going to move on. And you just can't simply allow yourself to let those previous no's, or in our case, missed shots, affect the next one. So as hard as it is, business owners absolutely need to be able to move to the next play when things don't go well. And with that said, you still want to learn from the previous experience, you know, especially if you made a mistake on your end. You want to make sure that you're not repeating mistakes or compounding mistakes. So this is not about just disregarding it. It's about not letting it alter your mindset or your confidence as you move forward.
So you think then, I could put words in your mouth, that a professional tennis player that misses a shot and breaks his racket over the court, that's not a good idea.
That is more than likely not a good idea, correct.
Well, Alan Stein Jr., thank you so much for being here. I hope our listeners who want more will buy your book, which is entitled
How the Raise Your Game, High Performance Secrets from the Best of the Best.
And I want just one last thing to remember, 4:30 Pacific time on Saturday, it's Penn State. Thanks, Alan. Thank you all for listening.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you all for listening to Money Talk, and we'll see you next week. It's